audio connoisseurs.
The listeners know. The listeners.
Well, there we go. Please get in touch at the Tutlist then. What is more relevant these days, Dorian Gray or Highlander? Reading's love affair with the FA Cup continues at full pelt after a resounding come from behind win over Huddersfield, but does a draw over 6th place Sheffield Wednesday spell the end for any realistic playoff push? We look ahead to another massive week of League and Cup action, plus give our take on Reading's two new signings, plus bringing you up to speed with all the latest transfer rumours and gossip ahead of next week's transfer deadline. All that and much more on the Tutlist End Podcast, episode number 82. Hello, thank you very much for joining us again, hitting that download button. Even if you turn off now, we've got your download. That's all that matters. We are that shallow. Thank you very much to everyone who is joining us for this latest part of the journey. Joining me here in the studio is Mr. Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Good afternoon. Good evening.
And we had a late substitution here. Westy was due to appear this week. Unfortunately, I've received a text this morning, and I hope his missus isn't listening. Received a text this morning saying, I've forgotten the missus' birthday. I can't make the show tonight. So he has informed me he has got a card.
Oh, okay. So lots of meticulous planning going into her birthday then.
Absolutely. But in his place is Mr. Steve Curtis, otherwise known as Royal Hoops. Steve, hello.
Hello. I'm like the Lafondra of podcasts.
You've come off the bench to save the day.
Yep. And standard.
And fire us to promotion. Steve, thank you very much for joining us. You'll recognise Steve from Tweets of the Week. So get
infamy.
Infamy, yeah. Long established part. Steve, welcome very much. Welcome very much to the show. So, lots to get on with, starting with that FA Cup win over Huddersfield, and of course then that 1-1 draw with Sheffield Wednesday. Let's hit the recap.
View from the Tutlist End.
Recapping this week's Championship action.
So guys, one win and one draw this week. Obviously the win coming in the FA Cup over Huddersfield, that 5-2 victory that sets up a fourth round tie with Walsall this Saturday. And then after that, this Saturday just gone, we drew 1-1 with Sheffield Wednesday. Two games that very much started in similar fashion, Johnny, with Reading falling behind early. I think you picked out this stat. It's 7 of the last 8 games Reading have fallen behind early doors. What is going wrong?
I think it's just the way Brian McDermott might be setting up the side. I mean, the most worrying one for me is the week just gone where, okay, I know that we were 2-0 down against Huddersfield and getting vastly outplayed until the red card, but you would think that we'd take a bit of momentum from that match and bring it into the league. Admittedly, Sheffield Wednesday are doing extremely well. I think they'd only lost one of their last 8 games, and that was to Middlesbrough. But then Sheffield Wednesday come out exactly the same way as Huddersfield did and completely dominate for 20 minutes, getting the goal, and obviously the penalty then turns things around. And for some reason, Sheffield Wednesday just sat back. And I really think that, you know, had they kicked on for a second or maybe a third, then they probably could have put the game to bed just as Huddersfield would have hoped that they had if they hadn't got that red card. I mean, it is worrying that we do seem to be starting games very slowly. And I think it's endemic of Brian McDermott teams, perhaps, because if you remember in his previous spell, we went through a very long period where you could almost go to games and you knew that it was going to be half-time 0-0. And then, of course, we had the great January comeback month where we'd fall behind and eventually pull it out in the last few minutes. And, you know, maybe that's just the MO of Brian McDermott's sides. You have to wait it out, grind it out, and eventually you're going to get there. But, you know, it's for a very long time in that match, it did feel like nothing was happening.
Yeah,
for both matches.
Steve, how does a team that looks so terrible for 20 minutes against Huddersfield pull out a 5-2 win? Was it a simple case of the red card completely changed the game, or did you just notice something else?
Yeah, well, obviously the red card did change the game, but also I wonder if it's a mentality issue, you know, going into games level and they're feeling their way around the game and wondering what's going on. But then as soon as they go a goal behind, they've suddenly got something to fight for. So whether it's something that they're going, oh, I don't know how to approach this game, and they're better at just attacking and going all out, I don't know. It's just, how can you do that, what they keep doing? It's a funny one, but yeah, it might be a McDermott thing. He might not be taking the pre-match talks as well as he should or something, or whether he's not setting the team up properly.
I think there is an issue with setting up the team, because, you know, another stat that I did pick out is Brian McDermott's been in charge for 9 matches now in his second glorious spell in charge, and he's made 3 half-time, or in 3 games he's made half-time tactical substitutions. So that's a third of our matches. He's got to half-time and realised something's going wrong here. And in one of those matches, he actually made 2 changes. So I do think that somewhere along the line, Brian McDermott either doesn't know his best side or isn't quite setting up the team quite right in the first half, because it is very, very worrying that we do seem to be falling behind and having to make these changes and chase games.
Well, the big tactical talking point from the Sheffield Wednesday game on Saturday was to employ Danny Williams at right. Now, Will has done a fantastic job of statistical analysis on the thetarlesden.com. You can go check out sort of his reasoning behind what he thinks Brian's rationale was, and to do with balancing out the midfield. Basically, Sheffield Wednesday ploughing through with six basically in the middle because their strikers are dropping deep and their wingers are cutting in. So he thinks that Williams was a tactical switch there. But a lot of people saying, why are you picking Danny Williams out there? Ola John is a natural winger. We've lacked a bit of width. Would you like to see John start on Saturday?
Yeah, I would. And I think a lot of fans would want to see John starting. But you've got, it's worrying that McDermott thinks we're playing at home, so let's set up to counter them, like their strengths, rather than take the game to them with a home side. I think a lot of Reading fans would actually want to see us try and just go at them and see what happens, especially when we've not been doing so well recently. Or is that naive of me?
No, not at all. I find it slightly worrying that Ola John still isn't deemed good enough to start games in terms of fitness-wise. I think Brian was saying in his post-match, oh, well, you know, if he buckles down and works hard and trains hard, should you not have been doing that for the last 6 months?
Yeah, and it did, well, maybe it's just the way I interpreted it, but it did sound like a bit of a public cry to arms or call to arms to him to, you know, to knuckle down and prove it to himself, as if over the last 6 months he's sort of been enjoying the ride so much. You know, I don't wish to say that that is absolutely the truth. Obviously, I've absolutely no idea. But, you know, I do think with Ola John, he is that typically sort of mercurial, exciting winger who can do something magic and can do, you know, can flatter deceive at times. But I think that, you know, when you're chasing a game, he's the perfect guy to bring on, because you could see that the team, the Sheffield Wednesday especially, were flooding towards him because they were worried about what he was going to do. And that creates space on the other flanks for our other players to get involved.
Yeah, well, Jack Killick's emailed in saying, I know you've looked at the stats to back it up, but I personally would never start Williams on the right when you have a player like Ola John on the bench. At the end of the day, we should have started with the team we had on the pitch at the final whistle. Certainly, Danny Williams improved when he went into the centre. I think we did finish the game much more strongly. Matt brings up a good point as well that I just wanted to touch on. He says, were you surprised how unambitious Sheffield Wednesday were after their goal? If they'd gone for it, I'm sure they'd have killed us off. And this is something that I said to Handbags, who sits behind me. I couldn't figure it out, because they looked so, so good for those first 20 minutes. Coming at us at will, they hit the post, they obviously got the goal, and from that point, they just sat deep. Mm. You know, Westwood, one of those annoying keepers that's taking time out of the game from the very first goal kick. Yeah. Just drives you nuts. I mean, professional, whatever, but it drives me nuts. And from then, they just didn't really go for it. I know they had a couple of little breakaways, but really, they should have gone for it, because we were there for the taking.
I mean, they did look very dangerous on the counter. I think Barry Bannon had a sort of half volley from about 12 yards that just went wide. There was one time in the first half where Forestieri was basically running at Jake Cooper and Ali Alhabsi and put into the side netting. So you could kind of understand it, but at the same time, I think they had enough. Well, clearly they had control of the game, and they certainly had enough to continue controlling the game, I thought. And eventually, I guess that only really played into Reading's hands, because there was only one side that was consistently gaining possession and territory, not really doing too much with it, let's be honest. But then, you know, eventually we get the goal.
Mm. That penalty totally knocked the stuffing out of them. Yeah. Like, they just seemed to, as soon as Vidra created that penalty from nothing, they totally sat back and were like, oh, okay, we'll just sit on this and counter them. Whereas before that penalty, you felt they could have gone for it, and that penalty kind of made them a bit more aware of the threat in behind, do you reckon?
Absolutely. And you brought up Matty Vidra's name. We'd be amiss not to highlight his fantastic hat-trick against Huddersfield. Johnny, we sat in this very studio last week, backing him up, sort of defending him a bit from Tim Deller's tirade after the MK Dons game. And it was fantastic to see him bounce back to form. Obviously, he then goes into the Sheffield Wednesday game and does miss a penalty. But are we finally seeing the real Vidra? Or has he been doing this all along and we've just not noticed?
I think he's been doing it all along. He does seem to be, you know, a scurrier and a harrier, and he's constantly tracking back and trying to start moves and stuff. You've certainly seen that over the last month, which was the game where we won 1-0 in the last minute, Bristol City. And
yes.
He was the one who, you know, tracked back all the way to his own half. And I do think that, you know, in fairness to Brian McDermott, I do think he's the kind of manager who will get the best out of him, because he's very, very much, you know, put his arm around him and say, come on, you know, we're all in this together. And I think that's kind of the kinship that Brian McDermott will instill not only in the squad, but specifically in him as well, because he does seem to be very much a confidence player. You know, when he came to the club, we had heard that he can tend to get a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Sulky, you know, if things don't go his way. But hopefully we can instill a mentality in him that he will keep going and will get the chances and will eventually find the net.
Yeah, and obviously, well, for me personally, I think that Jan Kermigant signing has been done with half an eye on getting the best out of Matty Vidra. Because Vidra, we've said it all along on this podcast, you know, look at how he had success at Watford. He had success because he had a good partner alongside him in Kermigant. And unfortunately, through to various issues with Mr. Orlando Saar, who we'll touch on in News Bites, that's not happened. But Steve, we only saw sort of, we saw 45 minutes from Jan Kermigant. He came on at half time. How do you think he got on his debut?
I think he is obviously going to be a good player. He's obviously going to work hard to fit into the team. And he should have scored that header.
Yeah, that's the only real block. I mean, obviously, it's a great little teasing cross, and you're just waiting for him to make contact with the game already at 1-1 and to win, you know, win the game on your debut. Real fairy tale stuff. Yeah. And Johnny just missed it.
It was. You just couldn't see how the ball didn't go into the back of the net. All he needed was a solid connection. He had a free header. It was, you know, fair to Norwood as well. It was another cracking cross after he set up Cooper's with the corner. And yeah, I mean, you know that he's good in the air or good with his head, and he just misses it.
That's what he's in the team to do.
Exactly.
<think. laughs> He's like the one forward player with an aerial threat. And
I will say, I didn't think he got massively in the game. I think you could tell that he's not played an awful lot of football recently. But, you know, we spoke to Kerry Payton, who's a Bournemouth fan and who's a big fan of Kermigant, and she said to us, you know, just wait. He does take a little while to get off the ground and run in. He needs that time to get his legs back, especially at 34.
Mm-hmm. I think you could see his class. There are a couple of touches he made, especially sort of chests down to someone, or, you know, a couple of nice little flicks, and he wasn't quite on the same wavelength as the other players yet, but that'll only come with time on the training pitch.
Well, this is another point, Steve, in that for me as well, is the forward five or six players are constantly changing week to week. Half of it is, you know, not Brian McDermott's fault. Obviously, Gareth McCleary getting that injury against Huddersfield forced his hand somewhat. Stephen Quinn apparently was having back spasms as well, so he's been out of the mix. But I'm just desperate to see a settled front six. Have you got a sort of core in mind you'd like to see the build around?
Well, obviously, McCleary, I think he needs a steady run of games, because we saw a couple of seasons ago just how good he can be. Hasn't done that since he had that, was it his back injury? He hasn't quite...
Yeah, and then he picked up a series of hamstring problems, didn't he, with Jamaica in the summer. Mm.
But he hasn't quite got back to his best, and we know how good he can be. Obviously, Kermigant and Vidra, you want to see playing up front together. That left wing spot is kind of open to anyone at the moment. You say HRK at the moment, but, you know, you can see John or Pearson or Quinn, or anyone can come in for that left-hand side.
Yeah, Johnny, HRK, Hal Robson Kanu. Credit where it's due, he comes in for praise this week, because I thought he had a cracking game. It's right from the first sort of minute, really. I sit in Y25 and just did some really nice skills on the ball and used his strength. And I said that and I tweeted, you look at how Robson can do, and you just think, how is this guy not a Premier League player? He's got everything you want, but he struggles to put it together. But on this day, I thought he had a great game.
Yeah, especially when he got moved out to the right. I think the key substitution in the game arguably wasn't Kermigant. It was bringing on Ola John for George Evans. If we want to touch on George Evans quickly, I thought he had a decent game, but he was very much playing a similar role to Oliver Norwood, in that one of them would sort of sit back and one of them would go forward, and they almost just took it in turns to do that. But yeah, the substitution of Ola John for George Evans, it put John on the left, where he had a bit of success. It put Kanu on the right, where he had a lot of success. And it put Danny Williams into the middle, where again, he had a lot of success. Yeah. So I think all three of them were helped by that substitution. And yeah, Kanu looked very good. I mean, we know his contract's up in the summer, and we certainly remember the Premier League season.
Johnny.
We certainly remember the Premier League season. What was it, 2011-12? Where
2013,
How consolation Kanu, wasn't he?
Yeah.
For a couple of months.
Yeah. He was very good in those few months. George Evans and Steve, obviously Johnny's touched on his debut as well. What did you make of him? We saw about an hour from him, signed from Manchester City straight into the team, which is a massive vote of confidence from Brian McDermott to go and throw him straight in there. How did he get on for you?
That was my thinking. I was thinking, we're against Sheffield Wednesday, the form team of the Championship, and you're throwing a guy that's only played League One and a handful of Premier League minutes into the deep end. I thought it was a bit odd to be chucking him in there. you can kind of see the reasoning behind it, because obviously if you're playing Williams on the right to counteract their narrowness, then yeah, okay, kind of, but it was a weird move to throw him in. But having said that, you know, he didn't look awful, he didn't look on form, he was kind of just...
He was just kind of there, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't really letting anyone down, he didn't make any massive mistakes, he didn't... At the same token, he didn't really contribute anything massively noteworthy. I did like the fact that he had the confidence to have a couple of pops.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we have criticised Danny Williams for taking one too many long-range shots, but he did have a couple of efforts. I think one from each foot as well. I might stand to be wrong there. But, yeah, I like that confidence that you come into a championship game and you're not afraid to have a go. You know, some players would be so overconscious and just doing the simple things and almost trying to have a quiet debut. But he wanted to make a name for himself, and that bodes well.
Mm. Well, he came on for Yaya Toure in the Capital One, so that's got to be a bit of an ego booster.
Clearly he's better than Yaya Toure, then. That's what that means. And just before we then move on, the defence as well. One change going into that Sheffield Wednesday game was Andrew Taylor getting dropped for Jordan Obita. A lot of people saying Taylor was hard done by. Who do you think, if you were Brian McDermott picking the team for the game on Saturday, who would you go with, Taylor or Obita? Or does it completely depend on who's in front of him?
Yeah, it does. I reckon it depends on who's in front of him.
I'm sorry, usually Johnny's the one that sits on the fence. I know you're fairly new to this podcast, Steve, but Johnny's usually the one that sits on the fence.
I'd like to take offence at that statement. I rarely sit on the fence.
Rarely this podcast, you mean?
I did predict a draw in the Sheffield Wednesday game. Is that me sitting on the fence?
Yes, this okay. is.
All right.
Anyway,
you've
sorry,
got me back to rights.
No, it's all right. Yeah, Obita looked rusty at the weekend, didn't he? But yeah, I think, it feels a bit harsh to have dropped Taylor. Maybe that was another tactical thing. Obita bombs on a bit more and you want a bit more attacking width, especially with Williams on the other side. That might have been a tactical... thing McDermott was thinking about, but I think we might even see a bit of rotation, because neither of them are doing anything to say I'm not worthy, but neither of them are saying play me every week.
I suppose the thing to remember, Johnny, is as well, obviously, that Andrew Taylor is still a loanee, Jordan Obita still very young and learning his trade with the season, and we'll touch on it in a minute whether we think the playoffs are still a realistic goal. But for me, you want to play players that you've got under contract as much as possible. You want to learn a lot about them. Brian McDermott's had quite a while now to see what Andrew Taylor can do. So I think he's going to give Jordan Obita that time and run in the side. And let's not forget, this is a man who was voted our player of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And a young player of the season as well. He's not a bad player. Yeah, he had a few shaky months at the start of this campaign. But if you get the best out of Jordan Obita, Reading have got a real weapon there.
Yeah, they do. Like you say, we have seen what Jordan Obita can do. I think Brian McDermott will sort of give them, you know, five or six games each. I'm not quite a subscriber to the theory of if you've got a player under contract for longer, Andrew Taylor's on loan, so you shouldn't play him as much, because I'm very much an advocate for you need to try and get a result, not necessarily, you know. I think this is why perhaps with more midfield reinforcements, you see someone like Tish Boller go out on loan, because yes, he's a young player, but at the same time, he wants more regular game time, and he's probably not the best option we've got in there at the moment. So I'm more a proponent for putting in either the best player or the one who's best suited for the game. Maybe Brian felt that, you know, Jordan with a little bit more pace against Ross Wallace, who again, you know, has a fair amount of pace on him himself, maybe thought that was the best decision.
Well, the other thing as well with the defence is obviously Jake Cooper and Anton Ferdinand forming quite a good little partnership now. Yeah, they are conceding a few goals, but there is some sort of an understanding growing there. And obviously the big thing for Jake was getting the equaliser. We finally scored from a corner, guys.
Oh, well, hey.
Was it 184?
I think it was the 187th corner of the season. Okay. And I think then we've wasted about three or four since. So I think we're up to one goal from about 190 corners. But Steve, good nod. Good goal.
Yeah, good goal. Yeah, I thought, was it Vidra on the line? Thought he might have nicked that from keeper, which would have been a bit harsh, let's be honest. But yeah, he scored a good goal. He's always been good in the air. He's a threat in the air. But I said to Johnny off air, he looks a bit like he's being asked to play a bit of an uncomfortable role, in that he's being asked to play the ball out from the back. And bearing in mind, he's only, what, 19, 20? And he's being asked to do that. It looks a bit... suspect on the ball sometimes, especially when he's got people around him. He definitely looks a bit shaky.
It's funny because for me, Johnny, he looks ungraceful, but the way he can contort his body and twist around, I always think, oh God, he's in trouble here. Mm. But he somehow manages to hook a leg round or something like that. He's quite acrobatic for a guy of his size.
Yeah, he certainly is. What is he, 6'6"? And then you've got Anton Ferdinand, who must be just about 6'1" next to him. Yeah, Cooper, you know, is a good player. I thought he had a shaky first 20 or so minutes. I think, you know, the fact that Sheffield Wednesday were coming on to us really sort of got to him. And he was the one who gave the ball away in the midfield for their opener. But no, he recovered really well. I think having someone like Anton Ferdinand next to him, and obviously you've got Chris Gunter as well, who's a very experienced player himself, he played himself back into the game. And, you know, I'm one of the biggest fans of Anton Ferdinand. I do think that when he's fit, he is an absolutely class act. Like I say, you really struggle to find what he does in games because he just gets on with his job.
Yeah. And
that's one of the best signs.
There was a guy sat behind me in Y22 who was moaning, saying, Ferdinand doesn't do anything. He's, you know, what does he do? And the guy next to him was like, that's a sign of a good defender, mate.
Yeah.
And I 100% agree. You know, you don't see him chasing back and running back, but that's because he's in the right place.
Yeah, if you're having to make dramatic last-ditch tackles, it means you've got your starting position wrong, usually. So, no, I 100% agree. So, you know, a couple of tweets before we move on. Brian Davies said, draw probably summed it up. Bored out of my skull for the best part of 70 minutes. Never let lone players take penalties. Simon Barnes also has asked a question about penalty takers. I might save that for the mailbag as well. But basically how that leaves it is, you know, 18 games left in the season. We're 11 points off the playoffs at the moment. 11 points off the relegation zone as well. Looking at it, usually they say 75 points is enough to get you in the playoffs. And that would mean Reading need 40 out of a possible 54, if I've done my very basic maths correctly, which is a long way. You know, you're talking sort of 12 wins and 4 draws from 18 games. You know, the margin for error is rapidly, rapidly declining. Is there any hope for a playoff charge from Reading this season, or are we just dreaming at this point?
There's no hope.
No hope.
You've got me on record saying that. No, look, Reading have done it before with Brian McDermott, but I think it would be folly to expect Lightning to strike, well, 3 times really, after what he's done in his previous spell. I think you've just got to, depressingly, a bit like last season as well, I think you've just got to say, okay, look, we'll build now, give Brian McDermott the time. I think you've got to, you know, if he's the manager that they want to back, then you've got to sort of say to him, look, do what you can this season, make sure we're safe, first of all, build us something for next year, and hopefully we can, you know, start on the ground running next season.
Any more optimism from you, Steve?
No, sorry, I'm in the firm no camp.
You're off the playoff bandwagon. Are we officially all off the playoff bandwagon now?
Yeah, I think we are. Yeah.
I think we are. Yeah. It's when you look at it. I mean, I was walking away from the game thinking, oh, you know, string a few wins. It's when you actually look at those maths and you realise quite how many points they're going to need. And, you know, we're still talking about that run of 6 wins in 7 that was in September, October. No, I struggle to remember 6 wins full stop since then. Mm. And, you know,
We still haven't won 2 games in a row under McDermott.
No. Going into a final 18, needing to win 12, and there are some very difficult games in that group as well, I think it's too much. I wouldn't rule it out. I don't think there's... I've said it all season long. We're not getting relegated. Don't worry about that. But, no, I think the dream's over. I think you give the cup every go. You know, we've got a fairly winnable tie coming up, which we'll talk about a bit later on, but the season's not dead. I think it's a bit more positive, and I hope it's going to go a bit better than the second half of last season, because that was just awful, and I don't think you want to turn the crowd off as much as they did. We just seem to lose 1-0 or 2-0 at home every week, and beat by Wigan, Leeds.
We didn't score a goal at home for 6 matches, did we?
Oh,
or 7 or 8 matches in the league, anyway.
So hopefully they'll be building. Obviously said, we've got some very talented young players in the squad. You know, we've mentioned them already. People like Evans, people like Abita, Tishbola, Fosu might come into the mix, maybe Dom Samuel. So lots to look forward to, but I don't think you need to worry about a bank holiday day at Wembley. Not for us this season. No. Right, anyway, that just about wraps up the recap. We'll move on now to a few news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, so a few bits and pieces of news since we've last recorded this show. You can catch up with most of the latest news in the podcast extra that went out on Friday. So check out, it's about 25 minutes of me and Charles chatting over all of the latest transfer rumours and speculation. Obviously, if you haven't downloaded that show and you've not paid attention to Saturday, Reading did sign 2 players. We've given our opinions on their debuts. George Evans signed from Manchester City for what is believed to be a free transfer, Johnny. Now, apparently this is all loaded up with incentives. Good deal for Reading. For me, it sounds almost too good to be true.
Yeah, it can't really be a bad deal. I mean, he's only 21. Like I say, on Saturday, he did seem a pretty similar player to Ollie Norwood, in that he's a bit of a sort of distributor, comfortable with the ball. Haven't really seen whether he can put a tackle in, but he seems like he'll be, you know, a reinforcement at the very least. Yeah. And, you know, he's only got the potential to grow. He seemed like he was comfortable. I didn't think he had the best game, but that's because he really didn't have the chance to impose himself on a match. And I think, you know, when you're trying to impose yourself on a game, I think that's probably when you'll see the best of him.
Yeah, and Jan Kermgant obviously arrives from Bournemouth as well. Again, fee undisclosed. We sort of understand it's around about the £500,000 mark. 18-month contract for him. Steve, any reservations from you about signing a 34-year-old on 18-month deal? I know a few people were sort of mumbling, saying we should be looking younger.
Well, yeah, but we're in a short-term business, aren't we? And if he's going to be here for 18 months and bang in, I don't know, say 30 goals or something, you're going to say that's not a bad deal.
Oh, and bite your hand off 30 goals for an 18-month deal.
There you go. But, you know, that is possible. We've seen his goal-scoring record in the Championship. He's very good in the Championship. And, you know, apparently he started football late. He's still got it in him to play for those 18 months at a high level. And you look at the likes of Jason Roberts and other old players that have come in and done an immediate impact, and you think, well, fine. And if it doesn't work, it's only 18 months, and, you know, move on.
Absolutely. And you can go and check out my piece I wrote on thetarleson.com about our, I think I just called it Old Man Stink or Old Guard Glory, something along those lines, looking at the likes of Trevor Morley, Jimmy Quinn, and some of those that didn't go so well, like Keith Scott.
Les Ferdinand
and Yakubu. So, yeah, go check that out. It's somewhere down on the front page.
Just touching on Evans quickly, this might be really cynical, but do you reckon he's like a long-term replacement for Norwood? They're thinking Norwood's going to the Euros, he's a good player, he might get some interest, so we'll bring in Evans now, and then we don't have to worry about when Norwood does leave.
Well, I think there is a part of that, because I think Norwood's got a year left after this, and so is Danny Williams. So you're looking at two players who are going to be on not small wages. Both of their deals ending at the same time parachute payments go. I think it's wise. I think if there's a good player available, well, you know, we've got a Spanish trialist as well, Javier Matilla, who's another central midfielder, and people are saying, well, why are you going after another central midfielder? If they're better than what you've got, or they give you a new option, and you can afford to sign them, sign them. For all we know, this guy could be better than what we've got. And it's the same for Evans as well. But yeah, Johnny, what do you think? Has he got one eye on maybe a midfielder making an exit in the summer?
I think you do. Yeah, I think he does. Yeah, and like you say, once you've got the asset in your squad, then, you know, you can use him as and when you feel like it. It's not like we signed George Evans, so we have to play him every single week. You know, you're going to have Norwood in there, Williams in there. You might send Tish Boller out on loan now. Don't forget, you've still got players like Fernandez, potentially this Matilla, Quinn's in there as well. So it just gives you more options and more freedom to do what you feel is right for the club.
Yeah, well, Javier Matilla has most recently been with Real Betis. He's a free agent at the moment. He was spotted in the hotel gym the other morning. Apparently, Charles Watts confirming he was training with the side this morning. He's played 50-odd games at La Liga. Again, just there's no harm ever taking a player on trial and having a look at him. Might be useless, might be great. It's not like we've gone out and spent 50 million on a player. 5 million.
If that would ever happen.
It might. Never know. They'll probably spend 50 million on Royal Elm Park at least. but yeah, so he's on trial as well. The other signing that looks pending, as we record this about 6 o'clock on Monday evening, is Dennis Rackles, whose name I've probably pronounced completely wrong, judging by Brian McDermott's comments towards Charles the other day. He is a winger come forward who plays for Latvia. Plays currently in the Polish league as well. Again, we're looking at maybe a £500,000 signing. Got a fairly decent goal record, Johnny, but this very much coming in the rough diamond category rather than polished product.
It's coming in the, we seemingly are transferring out one mercurial moody striker and getting in another one. I'm not really sure about this one. Obviously, I hope he proves me wrong, but when a player goes on strike or goes missing, I'm not quite sure that he's the sort of character I'd want to bring to the club.
But one Jimmy Kebbe did the same. With Lons.
Oh, okay, did he?
Before to get his Reading move done. So maybe we've got the new Kebbe.
Or maybe we've got the new Emers Fay.
No. Let's hope not. Emers Fay retired fairly shortly, didn't he? He didn't last very long at Nantes. Anyway, again, young, hungry, point to prove. It could turn out to be another Sarr. Could turn out to be great. I mean, there's not an awful lot to say about it. I mean, you can do all the scouting reports in the world and you can look at YouTube videos, you can get fan opinion and stuff. But until he actually appears and you watch him week in, week out, I don't know, you've just got to trust Brian. You know, he could be a Brett Williams, could be a Kyle Shepherd, could be a Kevin Doyle. You just don't know, do you? Or it could be something in between.
Do you reckon he'll bring back the big bad wolf to the changing room, like his former Latvian predecessor in the changing room?
Kaspers Gorks?
Yes.
Kaspers Gorks wasn't behind the big bad wolf.
Kaspers Gorks was the one wearing a wolf mask at Birmingham when he got promoted,
Was he not behind it?
I don't think so. It was Jason Roberts. I think it was Jason Roberts and Jim Carachan.
Oh, well, we've got Kermigan. He can be the Roberts replacement. And then you've got this guy.
Yeah, the French-Latvian connection.
Yeah, who can wear the wolf mask. And we'll bring
as opposed
back
to the... what country? Oh, Bermuda, was it? Roberts represented?
Possibly, yeah.
I love that Jason Roberts and Jim Carachan are Bermuda and Turkish internationals. It's just weird.
I think Kermigan would be more of a fox. He seems more sort of sly and wily.
The big sly fox.
Yes. I don't think that's quite the words of the song, no.
No? No, can't do a remix. Damn it.
Try it.
No. Okay. We're known for our unprofessional joke of a podcast. We can't have an unprofessional joke of a pop career
We can't have a professional remix of a pop song, no.
No way.
That'd be far too
this would be
for
a far.
Us.
This would be an absolute shonky version. So that just about wraps up News Bites. The one other thing to touch on is the aforementioned moody Mr. Orlando Sarr. Looks like he's going to complete a move to Maccabi Haifa. I think I've butchered their name correctly as well there. In Israel, clear that there's been a falling out. Johnny, the fact that Brian was prepared to say that he might be on his way in his post-match, he never usually talks about deals, but he sort of said there's something in the works, and that's why he wasn't involved.
Yeah, and Tim gave him the opportunity to sort of get out of it as well, as if, say, Orlando Sarr, why was he not involved today? Was it just, And Brian just said, yep, no, we think something's in the works. So it's disappointing because I think in the limited time that we saw Orlando Sarr, we thought he was basically POG plus one in just about every way in terms of his touch, his finishing, his heading, his strength on the ball. So it is disappointing. I mean, I think we did sort of know he had a few problems at his previous club, which, you know, he didn't start enough games or something. And maybe it just got to the stage where he was saying, look, I'm not starting enough games, I want out. And like I said, if you can't convince a player like that to stay, then, you know, it's best to just let them walk.
Never the same after that red card, was he?
No.
Against Derby. Never got back. I think he scored one goal after that point.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, did he even get in the squad properly since then?
He got that one start. He started against Bristol City, didn't last very long. And that was it. My dad was sat in the West Stand, kind of where you sit, Johnny, just behind the dugouts for the FA Cup game. And apparently Sarr was asked to sort of get changed and come on because they wanted to give Vidra an ovation. Apparently Sarr was not happy at all at having to get changed. Had a face like thunder. Brian, similarly, not impressed either. So I think that the relationship's broken down there somewhere. And one other piece of possible, a departure news, Johnny.
Yeah, Jake Taylor has today joined Exeter on a permanent deal.
Yeah.
Oh, well, good luck to him.
Best of luck. Was there a fee involved? This is obviously just happening.
I'm not sure of the fee, but I think it's a cracking move for him. I think in the time that we saw him, I think you could see that the Championship wasn't quite his level. But I think, you know, playing for a League 2 side, I think that's absolutely perfect for him. I do think he's probably better than a League 2 player. So I think that's a brilliant move for him. Obviously, Exeter, well, he's just about moved at the wrong time, hasn't he? He would have been playing at Anfield had he gone a week ago.
He's been on loan there before as well.
I think he has been in his past.
Yeah, good move. I mean, Paul Tisdale's obviously a very good manager, good club. We saw them what they did against Liverpool fairly recently. I wish the best of luck to Jake Taylor. Obviously, he came through the youth ranks at Reading. You know, went on, he scored some important goals for us last season. Got winners over against Ipswich, I remember, at the start of the season. I remember the season before coming on against Doncaster and making a massive impact to set up a couple of goals. Wish him the best, but unfortunately, it's just football, isn't it? You can be the nicest bloke in the world, great club man, but if you're just not quite good enough, and I think Jake himself will realise that he's not quite that level. But, you know, people can bounce back, spend a few years in the lower league, get regular game time. He's never really had that. So hopefully if he has a bit of stability at the same club, same people working with him, maybe he can come on. So, best of luck to Jake Taylor there.
It was a free transfer, and he was at Reading for 18 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it came right through. They show, don't they, in that montage, or they used to, like Jake's signing picture when he's first in the academy.
18 years at Reading and he never found out his best position.
No one found it out.
No one.
Well, luckily, Paul Tisdale says he's a very versatile player. But yeah. He doesn't have a best position.
Oh.
No, exactly. Well, there you go. Anyway, best of luck, Jake, and thanks for the memories. In the meantime, let's move on to Pub Chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, welcome back to Pub Chat. Now, this topic came to us, it was left over from the mailbag last week. Obviously, a massive, massive mailbag last week following that MK Dons defeat. So, I think it's the first time on this show we've ever failed to get through an entire mailbag. So, we thought we'd nominate this one for Pub Chat this
luckily,
week.
Luckily, we're not Santa.
Otherwise, no.
We'd leave a lot of disappointed people.
We would.
If you just left a note saying, yeah, I'll come back next year, mate, sorry.
Yeah, you can have two skateboards like next year. This one comes from Alex Everson, Reading fan man, who does our bookie watch. He said, you can sell three players this window, assume all have replacements lined up. Who do you sell and why? Steve, I'll go for you first.
Yeah, so I read this on the email earlier, and straight away, the two names that get, these are controversial, people are probably going to send me abuse.
At Royal Hoops.
Yeah, at Royal Hoops on Twitter.
Thanks.
Not at the Tarlhurst End.
Yeah. Abuse aware.
Send it to at the Tarlhurst End if you really want, you know,
please
avoid
don't.
Me. yeah, so Gunter and Robson Kanu, because they're both out of contract in the summer. Neither of them are going to sign a new contract. And to be honest, we'd get quite a hefty fee for both of them at the moment. So,
do you think?
Well, they're both in the Wales squad. They're both going to the Euros. They're both playing reasonably well.
But knowing that, though, would you get a massive fee for them? That would be my concern. I can't see you getting much more than $1 million for Gunter and probably maybe the same for Robson.
You're forgetting, we've got the genius that is Nicky Hammond, director of football. We got $1 million less for Nick Blackman than QPR got for Charlie Austin. Which club do you think is looking at that deal thinking, we got shafted?
I wonder. I can buy that argument, Johnny. With those two, would you be happy to see them go?
I wouldn't be happy to see Gunter go because, well, one, I don't know if you can sign an adequate replacement, but I think he is the definition of a steady right back. And I thought the game he had on Saturday against Sheffield Wednesday was probably one of his best games of the year. HRK, I can agree with. I think he does flatter to deceive at times. And I think, you know, there are adequate replacements within the squad anyway for him. So, yeah, I could
if you sell them both now after their performances at the weekend, you get even more money for him. Add half a million on.
There we go,
yeah. I think, obviously, I do agree, Stephen, that with them both looking unlikely to sign new contracts and the season, as we've saying, you can pretty much put a fork in it. I think you have to. I mean, Reading need to sign at least one fullback, one right back, because they've got nothing. There are a few people like Sean Long, Niall Keown, Shane Griffin, who can do sort of jobs at fullback, but none of them have stepped up to the point where they're considered a viable replacement. Even the, you know, Guns plays all the cup games as well, which always tells you something. I'd be tempted to cash in. Who's the third?
The third one is Ali Ahuabsi, because
he's on my list as well. Yeah. So I'll cross him off mine.
I'm really not a fan of his. He scares me. You know, not. He just, I don't feel confident in him ever in a game. And if you can sell him for, or even release him and sign a replacement, then do it straight away.
Yeah, he's on a 2-year deal, so he's not going to be cheap to get rid of. Johnny, happy to see Ali go?
Yeah, no, he was one of the ones I named as well. I think, you know, if like you're especially advocating, Dan, that we look to the future now that the season's pretty much dead, surely you'd want to see what you've got with your England under 21 international goalkeeper Jonathan Bond, rather than playing perhaps the more steady pair of hands. He's probably not. They're both as bad as each other, let's be honest. And if you're bringing in a replacement for Ali Alhabsi, then, you know, he's probably, as long as they aren't flapping around and making horrendous mistakes, and I can't see why you wouldn't want to get rid of Ali Alhabsi. He's not the future, is he?
It's hard to downgrade from that position at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't get much lower. You know, no offence to both of them, but one's had a great career, and I'm sure one will have a great career.
Yeah.
Just might not be with Reading. So who are the other two names on your list, Johnny? Who's made your cut?
Do you remember Paolo Hurtado?
Who?
I thought that was a song from The Lion King.
Really?
Hakuna Matata?
Paolo Hurtado.
Yeah.
There we go.
You should play just so we can sing that.
Yeah, we should get that chanting in the Y25. Get that one started.
Yeah, be on my own, I'm sure.
We've seen nothing of him. I mean, naturally, we don't... you don't know how good he is, but you'd assume that he's not very good, seeing as he can't get even near anywhere near a squad, and he's one of the only players that we have permanently here at the club. And the other one is Simon Cox, who, again, hasn't really had the success at Reading that we hoped when we brought him back from... Was it Forest we brought him back from?
Yes.
Yeah. And, yeah, you know, now Brian McDermott's putting him in a couple of squads, but let's be honest, I don't think... I don't think he's got a big part to play at Reading anymore. So that would be him. And the third one, Al-Habsi, as mentioned.
Yeah, I've got Al-Habsi on my list. The other two are a bit more controversial. One is Gareth McCleary, and the other is Danny Williams. Yeah, see, my problem with Gareth McCleary is we keep talking about that great spell he had at the end of 2013-14. But we're 2 years on from that now. And he's just not clicking. And I think he's someone that you can sell on that on his previous reputation. And they'll, you know, scouts will remember those great goals against QPR. I'm not saying they're stupid, but he's got more value than I think he's actually worth. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, definitely.
You can inflate that. And I think if a Premier League club comes in with four or five million... You look at what Michael Antonio went for when he was at Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah. You get that sort of money for Gareth McCleary, I think you'd take it, because he's not had the best injury record. He's not had the best form. And it seems that there was something going on while Steve Clarke was there. I don't know on which end it was there was a falling out, but he was conspicuous by his absence. Let's put it that way. So I think you cash in. I think you sign another winger, yet he'll be a massive loss, but this question does assume we have a replacement lined up. I just think that, I possibly think McCleary's peaked, and I don't know that we're ever going to see that McCleary that we saw. I hope we do, but I think there is a chance that we don't get it, and if a Premier League club does come in looking for that explosive winger to turn their season around, I think you'd cash in.
Will that McCleary replacement know how to cross?
You'd like to hope so.
Because McCleary's kind of forgotten how to do that, hasn't he? Mm.
He's never been great at it.
Flashy, like I said, you know, I've said many times, Gareth McCleary can take it past three or four men, but it's what you want from a winger is end product, and he doesn't seem to be able to deliver it into the right places.
No. So, and my thinking with Danny Williams is, again, he's not a combative midfielder that you put in to protect the defence. He's not a great attacking midfielder that's going to get you goals and set up goals. He's not got a lot of assists in his locker. To be fair, he has got 5 goals this season, but again, I think with the money he's on, it for me, it's the money is a big aspect, is because he is his Ingarrett signing. He is on a lot of money. He's one of the high owners at the club, and again, I just think you maybe look to move on. You maybe look to give people like Evans, like Tish Butler, like Aaron Cole, who's been a bit of a forgotten man, you give them that chance. And if you sign, you know, the replacement, say Evans was his replacement, I think if you told me now we're getting $2.5 million, $3 million for Danny Williams, which we can then, I don't know, spend in the summer, again, I'd be quite happy to take it, because I like him as a player. This isn't me just saying, oh, I hate these players, get them out of the club. It's, can I make an argument to get rid of them, and will it make us better? And I think possibly getting rid of Danny Williams might make us a better squad, depending if the money was used right. But again, I'm not exactly queuing
the
up.
The number of times he squanders possession or wastes a chance because he'd rather shoot does my head in. He gets near the D or anywhere near the box and he thinks, I'm not going to pass this, I'm just going to have a go. You know,
he's got two, I think we did this in last week's podcast, didn't we, Johnny? He's got something like 2 or 3 times the average shots per game more than Matty Vidra. Which says
I think
a lot.
That's a slight on Williams as well as Vidra.
Well, that's what I mean.
On Vidra as well as Williams. I like Williams, and not just because he shares my name. Well, honestly. He brings a bit of style to the place as well.
He shares one of my names as well, but I've just said we'll get rid of him.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe he's the best of both of us. Maybe the two unprofessional podcasters make a professional footballer.
I very much doubt it.
No, I don't think so either. But no, I like Danny Williams. I think he brings energy to the midfield. Every week that goes by, he reminds me more and more of James Harper, especially with the way he runs. He runs in that sort of crab-like motion that James Harper used to have. I'd like to see him stick around. Like you say, the money is probably a problem, but I think he's a good player. And to be honest, I'd probably put him first in the midfield and out of everyone.
I just see those two as not Al-Habsi for my third one, but those two is our most saleable assets.
Our most overvalued assets, would you say, yeah.
Yeah. and certainly ones you could make a lot of money for and then reinvest in young, hungry players. So anyway, that's our selections. Again, if you want to get in touch and have your own, at the Tarlest End on Twitter, thetarlestend@gmail.com for your emails, and it's facebook.com/thetarlestend on Facebook, just as these lovely folk have done in the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, time for the mailbag, and we'll start with Matt Castle, who again was one of the two people we didn't get around to in last week's mailbag. He says, do you think people like Nick Hammond need to be appreciated and trusted more by our fans? The club is constantly slated by our fan base for not knowing what it's doing, yet for over a century Hammond has saved this club and always done what's best. It shouldn't take Southampton signing Austin for the same price as Blackman for the majority to give him credit. It's sad how much people like him are overlooked in football. I presume he means since the turn of the century rather than over a century.
No, Reading footballing pioneers.
Is Nick Hammond Highlander?
Yes.
Has he got a portrait of himself?
There can be only one. Highlander? Anyone's up before your time, Steve?
Yeah,
no Highlander?
Before my time, no.
Okay, fair enough.
I was going to Dorian Gray portrait in the closet draped over.
Now I'm lost.
Now you're lost? What? Do you know, Johnny?
We're not literary men.
Oh, okay.
No.
We deal only in audio news.
Audio connoisseurs.
The listeners know. The listeners.
Well, there we go. Please get in touch at the Tarlhurst End. What is more relevant these days, Dorian Gray or Highlander?
That's homework for next week as well.
Indeed, yeah.
Read Dorian Gray.
Anyway, now that we've wasted a good minute or so with the mailbag, what do you reckon about Matt's question? Do people like Nick Hammond get enough credit from the fans?
No. I think Nick Hammond, like I said many, many times on this podcast, he, like a bit like just, Sir John Medeski, he just seems to know how to get the best deal for the club repeatedly. I can't think of many deals that we've done that we've actually lost thanks to Nick Hammond. Like you say, I mean, you look at the most recent one, Nick Blackman going for $3 million. I think I'd have taken $1 million. Most people, when we sort of said, how much would you take? We'd say $1.5 million probably. We get double that. When you say Charlie Austin, as I said, going in a similar situation to Southampton for $4 million and scoring the winner at Old Trafford, I think that's just one place over the last 10-15 years where Nick Hammond has done an incredible job of maintaining the cash flow of the club.
Steve, do you think the fact that Hammond's a bit of a private bloke, you don't, you know, often hear a lot about him? I mean, he does come up with the occasional interview, but do you think that because he's quite quiet and in the background, that is a reason why he attracts a bit of negativity?
I mean, it might do, but I don't think that's a good reason to be harsh on Hammond. I agree with everything Johnny said, but, you know, I think the fact that he knows Reading, was here as a player, he knows the whole club, and I think he has magical powers, because the number of players... Okay.
He is Highlander then.
give me a sec. The number of players he sells for a decent fee, who then go on to do absolutely nothing, it's like he takes their footballing ability away when he sells them. Like, you look at Blackman, who has gone to Derby for a wonderful fee for us and is doing nothing, and they kind of hate him already.
I reckon Nick Hammond is the one putting together all those great YouTube videos. You know, the ones that can make, like, even Royston Drenthe look great?
Mm.
Or make Carl Shepherd look like an appealing signing? I bet that's Hammond. That's what he does for Reading fans. He just, like, sells one of this wicked YouTube clip, puts, like, a banging tune behind it, and they're just sold. I think that's how transfers work, isn't it?
Just about, yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. Anyway.
You reckon Hammond is DJ Mega Party then?
Ooh. No. Okay. No. That's like the light and the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
Hammond's like a Jedi and Mega Party's a Sith.
Kylo Ren.
Mm. Yeah, he's a Sith Lord. Don't. People might not have seen it.
What, saying the name Kylo Ren?
Yes, it's a spoiler.
Okay.
Anyway.
I don't know what it's
this
spoilers.
Mailbag's getting rapidly off track with Star Wars, Dorian Gray and Highlander already. No, I do agree with
time
what you both...
to force it back on track.
Indeed. I very much agree with both of you what you said. I think he's done a fantastic job. I think the very fact that Arsenal were looking seriously at bringing him in says all you need to know about how highly he's rated and the job he does in football. You ask any of the managers he's worked with, not a single one's got a bad thing to say. Even people like Brendan Rodgers and, you know, Steve Clark, people that... Nigel Atkins, people that didn't necessarily have very long to work at the club, not one of them's come out and said, oh, yeah, he's that director of football. He really stitched me up. He's the perfect model for a director of football. Steve Coppell described it best. He was a great bridge, so he didn't have to deal with all the, you know, sort of the finer details of transfers. He just let Hammond get on with it.
Mm.
And obviously, Steve Coppell knows a thing or two about managing football clubs. So we'll move on. Talk Reading. This one probably should have gone in pub chat. He says, if you could go for a pint with any player in the current squad, who would you pick and why?
I'd go for Ali Al Habsi, so I'd have 2 pints.
Oh. You went there. You went there. Ali Al Habsi's faith, obviously not allowing him to drink. Yeah. Johnny profiting from that.
Absolutely.
He could have a pint of Coke. Pint of soda and lime.
He could do, yeah.
Whatever he got, he'd probably spit it on you. Flappy hands.
Don't trust him to come back from the bar. I think this might have been inspired by Paul McShane sitting with the home fans that weekend. A lot of people saying that Paul McShane would probably be a decent guy to get on a night with.
He's one of my favourite people on social media. Absolutely. He clearly doesn't sort of toe the party line, or not one of these great win, on to the next game, yeah, well done lads, banter, that sort of thing. He's very much a I'll say what I want, this is my account sort of thing. Yeah.
I think when you're coming out with phrases like, what was it, tight as a snake's that's not bum?
Family show.
When he comes out with that, you know, you want to spend a night in the pub with him because he'd come out with loads of one-liners.
Yeah, I find I like to, obviously, my renowned admiration for Stephen Quinn means I'd have to consider a pint with him. You know, and saying, how are you so good in the midfield? Why have you made such a different style football club? Please, Stephen, tell me.
Just don't give him a pat on the back because that might, you know, make his injury even worse.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's a shame now, both McShane and Quinn. I mean, we did have slight concerns about their injury history, and sadly, it's all playing true. I can't really think of too many other people in the squad, really. That I mean, Chris Gunter seems like a nice enough chap.
Anton Ferdinand's pretty funny on Snapchat. So
yeah.
And he might invite his brother along.
Yeah, it could do. Yeah, it could have a nice big... And I'm sure they'll go to some... It'd be dangerous, though, going out for a pint with him. I imagine they go to quite flashy venues.
He probably wouldn't bring a pint. He'd bring a bottle of champagne or something.
I think Ola John looks like a bit of a party boy as well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Boys and Drenth. I know he's not in the current squad, but...
Go around Drenth's house to play FIFA. Apparently, that's what he did once, didn't he? He invited a load of fans around. I don't know. So please send in your suggestions about who you'd like to go for a pint with in the current squad. Ollie says, what would your first choice centre-back pairing be when everyone is fit? One we've had to answer quite a few times this season, Johnny, which to me suggests that there's not a standout pair, but who out of the two for you do it?
I'd go for McShane and Ferdinand. I think they've got the experience. I think Jake Cooper is a brilliant backup at the moment, but he hasn't fully convinced me. Like I said, I thought on Saturday he still was a little bit dodgy, although he did deal with everything pretty well. But I think you've got two very much known quantities there in McShane and Ferdinand, and when they're both fit, they're probably the best two centre-backs at the club.
Steve?
Yeah, I'd agree. We started the season with them too, didn't we? And
yeah,
they were amazing in defence, and we haven't been quite so solid since. That pairing has been dismantled by injury and form and the like. So to put them back together, I think, makes so much sense that it needs to be done.
Yep.
But injuries.
It's a clean sweep. For me, I'd go for exactly the same pairing. Sam Ferguson says, are we over-reliant on Oliver Norwood? Seems to be the only one playing the ball forward, and as a result, we're very easy to shut down.
Yes. But I think the thing that most annoyed me about Norwood on Saturday was he kept doing these sort of, you know, raking 40-yard balls, which looked very good, but they were sideways, and all that happened was Sheffield Wednesday players just pushed forward 10 yards because they could, because there was absolutely no danger. And yeah, I mean, you've seen it so many times. If you shut down Norwood, you shut down our team. And I think we are over reliant on him, and I think he gets more praise than he deserves, Norwood.
Ooh, controversial.
Cool. Mm. Yeah, well, I'd say he's the only midfielder in our squad that can feed Vidra. We all know Vidra likes through balls and running in behind and stuff, and Williams doesn't pass, he'd rather shoot. And Evans is an unknown quantity. Tish Boller likes sitting back and kind of just doing the basics. And so Norwood is the only one in midfield that is willing to feed Vidra in the way that he would like. And so I think if we're going to see Vidra at his best, we've got to see Norwood at his best with fewer of those Hollywood passes. But he tried it a couple of times on Saturday, didn't he? He tried a few of those through balls. And if he tries more of them, you know he's the only one with the quality in
the
squad.
You can't spell Hollywood without Ollie Norwood. That's all I'm saying.
Very true. This mailbag has been a cracking one so far.
It has.
So far. You know, this is vintage. This is going in the Tyler Sten Podcast Hall of Fame section.
I think we'll just replay this one at the end of the season for our highlights podcast.
Yeah, why not? We don't have an end of season awards.
No, we'll award it to ourselves.
Yeah, indeed. Oliver Norwood, I think he's a fantastic player. Are we over-reliant on him? Not really. I think
it might appear that way at the moment because he's the only one that actually plays
every single week.
If you look at it's like I said earlier, if you look at the cast around him, it's constantly rotating in terms of the strikers, the wingers, even a central midfield partner. You know, he's had Williams, he's had Quinn, he's had George Evans. So obviously he's contributing a lot because he's playing a lot. I don't think they're over-reliant on him, but he's an important player. And, you know, over-reliant, no, because I think if Oliver Norwood got injured tomorrow and you had to play Williams and Evans in there, would we significantly drop off? I don't think so. I don't think it would be an absolute catastrophic collapse in form. I mean, as I said, Norwood's been playing every week and, you know, the form's not been great. So, very good player, but no, I don't think we're over-reliant on him. Evan Collins, would you sell the players out of contract this year if bids came in for the transfer window closes? I think we touched on that with our player departures. I think most of us would cash in. Johnny?
Certain ones I would. Gunter I'd like to keep, but that's
if someone comes in, though, for Robson Kinnear, you'd wave goodbye?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Steve,
said yours, yeah. I said
it. And I'm the same as well. I think when you say that the season is pretty much over, I think if... I don't want them to give them away. I don't want like someone to come in with 200 grand for Chris Gunter and then take it. I think it has to be a reasonable market bid of seven figures for either man. But then if we can use that money to reinvest, great. Stacey says, with all the rumours around new signings that we don't appear to need, do you think it's Brian or the Ties wanting them?
The argument about the Ties wanting them doesn't make much sense to me because they're not exactly big name signings. You know, you think about this Dennis Rachels, who I'm going to pronounce like that.
Are we going Rachels?
Rachels.
Rachels.
Brian, take note. But I don't think he's not a big name. So I don't know why the Ties would go, you have to have him. Because, well, why? What's the, you know, it doesn't offer anything big to the club. He's not a big name who's going to sell loads of shirts or anything. I don't know, but Brian obviously hasn't been at the club that long. Did he scout him for Arsenal? Highly unlikely. Is it just someone the scouts have brought up and said, this guy, give him a go. He'll only cost you 500k. And he's gone, oh, all right then.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, if they're good enough and they're going to improve your squad, it doesn't matter if you keep signing midfielders. As long as you keep signing midfielders that are better than the last one. Mm. As I said, this guy could turn out to be a great bargain find and we're all singing, you know, Matilla, what a bargain. We just don't know. I mean, the club take loads of trialists on. You know, you just don't often hear about them. I remember, you know, we had like Lee Hendry, do you remember, training with the club one summer? People like that, they've taken in players before. It's not necessarily that we're going to sign them. And you don't know, like Steve said earlier, it could be a case of that maybe there's a bid in the works for one of our players. So until the window closes and until you actually see these players perform, I don't think it's massively fair to judge them. Are the Ties having an influence? I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're having an influence in terms of saying we'd like to see, you know, you go and scout some players from here, or, you know, we've heard about a player like this. Would you mind taking a look at him? And I don't think there's a shame in that. You know, it's their football club. As long as they're not saying pick this player, that's all that matters. Or, you know, they're not forcing a player on him. They can make suggestions all they want. I'm sure they do. In fact, I'm quite happy if they're actually engaged in football enough to actually be able to say, here's a guy who's not played in La Liga for a while. I think it would be different if they were saying, play this guy every week, and it was clearly obvious he wasn't good enough. But until that starts happening, I'm not going to worry too much. Andy Carter says, can we discuss DJ Megaparty and how he reads half-time scores? Who has ever heard of anyone say, is losing 1-2?
Hang on, I think we found him.
It's Megaparty.
It's you.
I wish.
You wish.
I wish I got paid to be an unprofessional joke of a pre-match caster.
To not know opposition players' first names. I avoid the entire bowl at halftime. I just go.
So Steve, we've not had you on record about DJ Megaparty. Are you a fan?
No, who is a fan? Have you yet to find a fan?
His employers, obviously.
They've probably tied down to a contract they can't release him from. A bit like Pierson or Ferdinand.
No, he needs a release clause.
Is this the new signing that Stacey's referring to, perhaps? Do you think this was a tie signing?
Could have been.
Megaparty.
Look, our opinions on DJ Megaparty are very well known. We are not a fan of his. Is he... Okay, let's be fair to him. Is he getting any better?
No.
No.
I think he's getting
a very tiny bit better, but he's not making any significant strides. He's maybe like taking a smidge forward.
By the way, just on the pre-match entertainment, they have actually added the words to Postman Pat now. Before, it was just the theme tune to Postman Pat.
I enjoyed the way that half of the Royals Post segment was stuff from the football club themselves. So it's just like, we've just sent this in to ourselves.
My favourite part was when they moved from the Postman Pat theme tune into some dirty dubstep by Knife Party. Yeah. Centipede, which was...
So no, he's not improving. That's the answer. Yes. No.
The team is... Yeah.
No. Yeah, okay. Well, that covers DJ Mega Party. Now, we've had a big email in from Tom. He's basically defending the Vidra haters, as it were. He's defending people like himself and Tim Deller that were critical of Matty Vidra up until the Huddersfield game. And to be fair, he says he gives him a huge credit for that. That turnaround, but he feels that he shouldn't escape the microscope and the criticism because he feels he was poor before that. He also goes on to talk about Rahels, saying he looks like a bright prospect, and then goes on to also say about the Sheffield Wednesday game. He left the game feeling positive, but it was a huge disappointment. Thought the team selection was all wrong and that they needed to start with Ola John. And also very happy that we signed from a corner. And he says, finally, on Chris Gunter, with fans calling for his exit and their relaxed view that he'd be an easy loss is deluded. He's been constantly good for us, doing his job and playing games by their nature. If he were to leave, it would be a huge loss for the club.
Who's called for Gunter to go? I haven't heard
I think there's a lot. I don't think there's a lot. I think there's a vocal minority that are happy to see him go. We ran a poll. You know, Becker wrote a piece on Chris Gunter fairly recently about his contract situation, and I think it came out something along the lines with 30% saying, you know, sign him whatever the cost. You know, if he asked for a massive deal, give it to him. I think another 50% were like, well, yeah, offer him a new deal, but it has to be right for the club. And I think it was only something like the 5% were like, oh, I'll sell him on in January, and like another 5% were like, oh, we'll keep him and then let him go. So I think he's got a lot of fans, but there are a few people you think it'd be easy to go. I mean, I've, you know, we said it earlier, if a bid comes in, a decent bid, we'd be happy to sell him. Well, not Johnny, but...
Yeah, I mean, I know I said sell him if a decent bid comes in, but that's not me saying get rid of him. That's not me saying go hunt down people to buy him. It's just, if someone offers a million or more,
then... Hey, you
then...
need a right back?
Yeah.
That almost wraps up the mailbag. One final question, which I was going to touch on in the report, but I thought I'd hold back on, was from Simon Barnes, who said, after the penalty miss on Saturday, who do you think has been our best ever penalty taker? Nick Blackman or Gylfi Sigurdsson for me? I don't think Blackman missed one.
Gylfi Sigurdsson for me. Probably because I've just been reminded how good he is after his penalty at the weekend. You know, that was spanked. Can I say that? Yeah.
Yep, you can.
Say that. Spanked! Into.
Whoa, not that loud.
That was spanked into the top corner. And I think, I can't, you know, how ice cool he was at Liverpool and... That, you know, he's just good.
He is. Jimmy Quinn was a great penalty taker as well. Very cool. Darren Caskey took a pretty decent penalty as well.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Not related to penalties, but I always remember one time Darren Caskey came on as a sub to take a free kick and scored it.
That does ring a bell.
He was quality with the ball at his feet.
He was very good set pieces.
When he had to run for it, it wasn't.
Conversely, though, someone who came with a good reputation for penalties was Ian Hart, and I can only remember Ian Hart missing penalties. Remember, he missed one at Birmingham on that last day of the season.
He scored West Ham in one of our best wins ever.
Yeah, I know, but he did miss a load. He missed one against Barnsley. I just remember he just wasn't particularly good at penalties. Anyway, so there you go. A few suggestions there. Get them in. I said he goes for Nick Blackman or Gylfi Sigurdsson, both of whom were very good. I'm sure Derby fans would love a goal from Nick Blackman one way or the other at the moment. Not made a great start. Has he? No goal so far. So
Nicky Hammond's magic powers.
Yeah, indeed. Quite. Just before we do move on, just a couple of quick other ones. Picking up on last week's pub chat, in terms of players that had high hopes for, but didn't quite pan out. Rob from the Two Unfortunates, who will join us on this show next week or the week after.
That's a plug for you.
Indeed, yeah, reason to tune in. He said, players had high hopes for, but didn't click. Ray Houghton is the most obvious one. Others who didn't live up to the hype include Steve Moran, Carla Saba, Craig Maskell, Bobby Mikhailov and Michael Meeker. Very much agree on Bobby Mikhailov.
Carla Saba we paid a silly amount for. I think we paid about 700 grand for
him. Yeah, it was close to a record, if not a record's on it.
Yeah, and that was, what, 98, 99?
Summer of 97. He scored a few goals that season. I remember he had a really good game at Sunderland, but just never kicked on, and Tommy Burns just didn't take to him at all and shipped him off. And the frustrating thing was, I think he went to Gillingham, and just banged home the goals.
Yeah.
So a player with a lot of potential. Some good names there as well. And Dave Stevens as well. I thought I would read this out. He says, "The defence of Brian McDermott by handbags on the latest Tyler Send podcast was the most sensible thing I've heard on all matters Reading FC for months." Doesn't sound like something that we would have said on this show, Johnny.
No, far too sensible.
Yeah, can't have come from this unprofessional joke of a podcast.
Absolutely not. But no, on that point and handbags' defence of Brian McDermott, I think it was just generally for all managers, for all clubs, you need to give them time. And I think especially in this social media driven world of instant gratification, you know, people want change and they want it now and they want their voices to be heard. And ultimately they want to sort of advertise themselves with their opinions. So, yeah, you know, you never really heard about this much sacking or speculation 10 years ago.
Indeed, yeah. Go back and listen to it. It was a very, very good defence of Mr. McDermott by Handbags Harris, who will return in the next couple of weeks to this show. Right, that wraps up another massive mailbag. Just a quick time for any other business. We'll look ahead to the Walsall game.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Welcome back to Any Other Business. Just before we preview that Walsall FA Cup game, a massive, massive thank you to all of you who've continued to support us through the crowdfunding campaign. Your contributions are very much welcome. It's the reason why we've been able to invest in new recording equipment that has hopefully improved the show over the past few weeks. As I said, still work to be done. We're still projects and things we want to try and invest in. We do need your help to do so. Obviously, we try and do as much as we can here. And we joke about being an unprofessional joke of a podcast, but we do like to try and bring you the best possible output we can every week. And it is, as I said, a massive thank you to those of you who put your hand in your pocket. We don't ask for anything. We'll keep doing this as long as we can, as long as my missus can put up with me taking over the living room a couple of times a week. But yeah, it does help and it does give us a little boost. So thank you very much to those of you who have done so. And if you are interested in donating, there will be a link attached to this episode on thetardlessend.com. Just go and follow it there. Right, the FA Cup drama continues, Johnny. It's Walsall. It's the 2001 grudge match. They come to the Medeski Stadium on Saturday. They are third in League One. They've only lost one of the last 12 in all competitions, and they beat Brentford away in the third round. So no mean feat there. Are we really going to get through this one?
I hope so. Because I think, you know, this season is very much becoming just like last season, and that you're hoping for a cup run to, you know, to get anywhere close to something glorious or something to celebrate. And, you know, the gods seem to be favouring us so far with the opponents we've had. Walsall, I think it will be a tough game, and they'll be looking almost a different way. I think they'll be hoping that they get a bigger club in the next round so that they can, you know, get a bit more money, get a bit of publicity. But no, I think we'll just about come through this one. I wouldn't like to go up to Walsall on a Tuesday night, so I think we've got to finish this
How
one
cliche.
At 90.
Do you think Ola John can perform at Tuesday at Walsall?
I don't think he could. No.
It's the old acid test, isn't it, for any foreign player that comes into the league. Oh, can they handle it, though, in a grim Midlands venue on a Tuesday night?
Walsall's not that grim. Well, it probably is, actually, but...
I don't know. If you happen to live in Walsall, please let us know at the Tarlhurst End. Steve, is this setting us up for a massive fall, or are we going to move one step closer to a return to Wembley?
Well, Walsall will be looking at us and going, we can have them. They're on dodgy form. You know, they're scoring, they're conceding, as most teams do. But they're also, you know, they're drawing, winning, on a bit of a funny bit of form.
They're either drawing, winning, or losing every week. They're certainly getting one of those three results.
Yeah. Sounds like Michael Owen here, doesn't it?
I am the Tarlhurst End's Michael Owen. Anyway, so yeah, I think Walsall will be looking at Reading and going, we can have them. And Reading will probably equally looking at Walsall going, they're on form. They might be the league below, but they're actually on form. And so on the day, it might actually be a case of Walsall might be coming to bring the game to us, which might work in Reading's favour because we all know they prefer counter-attacking.
Yeah, Tom Bradshaw is in their lineup. He's a player that Reading have been linked with, and following in the footsteps of Gary Hooper, Callum Wilson, and everyone who seems to be linked with the club, Naki Wells, who goes on to bag against us, I'm willing to bet he'll get his name on the score sheet.
Then again, it would follow our general transfer policy of buying players we play against in the FA Cup as well. So,
well, we sign him afterwards, yeah. No Evans, obviously, cup-tied for this one. I think Kermigant's also cup-tied, though I stand to be corrected on that one. So there will be a couple of changes, which is a shame, really, because you'd like to see them get as much time as possible. But would you make any other changes, or do you go with that strong team?
I think you have to go with a strong team. You've had a week's break. What have we got? Ipswich the next Tuesday.
away. And I think, yeah, I think you've got to go at it with your strongest team. And I think Brian McDermott is a sort of manager who will do that, because he will, look, as much as anything, he'll be wanting to get as many good results as possible to put us in a good frame of mind. And the only way to do that is to put out strong teams and win games.
I would like to see Jonathan Bond come back in. That's not just because I really don't like Al Habsi, but it's also a different competition. It's a good chance to rotate the goalkeepers, and I don't think Bond's been given enough of a fair chance by McDermott, to be honest.
Yeah, I wouldn't be completely against it. I wouldn't mind seeing someone like an Aaron Cole or someone like that get a game, but we'll have to see how it goes. So it's going to be a tough one. Predictions, gents, obviously this one not included in the prediction league. Steve, you can be our guest predictor for this one.
2-1 Reading.
Johnny?
I'll go for a 2-1 home win as well.
I will say 1-0 to Reading. In the prediction league, just very quickly updating as well, Charles Watts correctly predicting a 1-1 against Sheffield Wednesday. Yep. He extends his lead at the top to 4 points now, unlike Arsenal, who choked over the weekend. I'll get that one in there. So he moves up to 21 points. Johnny, you did predict a draw. You said 2-2, as did Westy, so you both get a point each. I said a Reading win, as did Dave. So no points for us. So yeah, Charles top on 21. I'm second on 17. Johnny on 15. Westy on 12. And Handbags in relegation danger on 8 points. But to be fair to me, he did miss half the season. So won't complain too much. But yeah, that just about wraps up the show. We will be back next week. Now we'll probably be recording on Monday evening. Obviously, that is transfer deadline day. So we're in a difficult position, really, because we can't record on Tuesday because Reading are playing a game against Ipswich. So it was either record on Sunday or record into Monday evening. So we'll try and do our best Monday evening and try and, obviously, hopefully Reading have done all the business.
Are we going to have another spectacular live FA Cup draw as well that we did last year?
Is that on Monday night as well, on deadline day?
I'd assume it's on a Monday night, isn't it?
It might be. I don't know.
Because the games are on Saturday, Sunday.
If so, Friday, yes. Monday, Tuesday. If so, yes. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. Probably going to be Monday night. I'll be back with Charles on Friday for the podcast extra. We'll obviously build up and get all the latest team and injury news, plus get an update on that transfer speculation. So if you've not subscribed to us in iTunes, please do so. It means you'll get the show straight to your device as soon as it is released. But there are plenty of other downloading options as well. We're all off now. And so nothing left to be said. Come on, you ass. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. Funny how they always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. People let it seem as I don't tell. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.